Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
Faith here with your welcome toast. Pizza tastes as good as being skinny feels.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Brosberry and Alex Province. Delicious recipes coming your way. Well, we're into a kind of calorie friendly approach right this time of year.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a bad thing to do. I mean, if bears hibernate, we can do it. So here's our thing. We want to say, how do we make food delicious without using all these heavy salts and fats? And can we do that? We know we can. We're going to get to some full-blown recipes in a little bit. But right now, poaching seems like this kind of genius thing to do to your proteins, whether it's shrimp or chicken or whatever it might be. You even can poach your vegetables if you don't want to use up a lot of olive oil, because we're trying to keep things as calm and even getting back to basics as we can. And we think, I mean, we're into this right now because we believe that a recharging like this jacks up the ability of the taste buds. Now, they say with each passing minute of your life, your taste buds get just a hair weaker. Well, it's amazing what happens to taste buds when you deprive them of that influx of fat and sugar and salt. Suddenly, you really taste things. With just a whisper of salt.
So you recalibrate the whole palate.
That's the better way to say it, Alex. Okay,
clean
good for
food.
You. All right, so here we go. Poaching. Let's talk about how we do that. You know, if we're doing it with chicken breasts, a little piece of fish, whatever it might be. Chris, if we're doing poaching in water for, say, a chicken breast,
sure,
there are more things to use as you're poaching liquid that are a little bit more interesting. But let's do the most basic things.
Okay, I would take a shallower pan. I would take my chicken breast and put it in there, make sure it fit, that I can have liquid over it, right? And then I would pour in water, and I would season my water with
How
some
much
things.
Water?
Just covered.
Just covering the
chicken breast. And I would make sure I would put in some seasonings, like peppercorns are good, fresh thyme. Again, things that
tarragon.
Tarragon.
Chicken.
Yeah, this could be whatever you like and whatever your favorite things are. I also like putting either onions or leeks in. Carrots are good, too. You're making, like, it's called a court bouillon or a poaching liquid, or basically a vegetable broth that you poach your chicken in.
You want us to throw those things in with our chicken breast.
Yes, you're going to just, and not a lot. We're not talking about, like,
all
a
cold,
soup.
Like cold water?
Yeah. Cold water. Put your chicken in, a couple slices of onion, peppercorns, thyme, tarragon, if you like tarragon, whatever spices.
Or if you don't have half the things you're mentioning, you just take whatever you've got.
I poach it with water and a little curry powder. Again, you want to give your water some flavor. Spices don't affect calories. So use whatever you like. Okay, and you bring it up to where it starts to simmer.
Is that on low, medium low?
No, I go on high, and I bring it up till it just starts to bubble a little bit, and then I turn it down because I want this to come up pretty hot quickly.
Turn it down to what?
Every stove is different. I'm going to go somewhere between.
But what do you want to have happening in the pan?
Little bubbles.
Like little champagne bubbles.
Yeah, little bubbles, just and not lots of them, just one, two, one, two, one, two. It's a very soft simmer. Mm-hmm. And I like to cover whatever I'm poaching right up to it, whether I just take a piece of parchment paper or
a lid
or aluminum foil. It doesn't even have to be anything fancy. Just cover it nice and let it simmer softly until it's fully cooked, you know, 165. You want to make sure it's totally cooked.
You know what? This is the thing. I'm just being completely honest.
No, go.
When I'm at home, I cut into it.
That's what I do.
Most...
I like to make it look like I don't do that. So I make a little incision on the bottom side and I peel it open, look at it, and close it up. And then I serve that, if I'm serving it right away to friends or whatever, family, I put that on the bottom, and no one even knows I
now
cut
I'm
into
gonna
it.
Now I'm going to flip it over.
Oh,
at your
you
house.
Totally.
Gonna,
you can totally. And
I
you'll definitely
honesty.
See the incision.
Okay.
You got to keep the appearance up.
And we want, but tell me how you want it to look inside.
Totally
Do I want
cooked.
A whisper of pink? No.
No, not with chicken. No. You want it totally
white,
cooked through,
right?
All white. I even like cooking it for a longer period of time to where the chicken almost shreds a little
like
bit.
Like stringy.
Yeah, stringy. Yeah. Because now you got to think about not how to poach it, but what are you going to do with the poached chicken? Are you going to make a sauce with it? Are you going to take it and shred it on a salad? For me, the number one thing I love doing with it is tacos.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
that's
just
great.
Shred it up.
I'm trying to get everybody off.
So sour cream, cheddar cheese.
No, lighter
drizzle.
No,
some bacon.
No, wait
go
a minute.
Light, just
I'm
a little bit of lettuce and a tortilla.
And a tortilla is the problem.
Oh,
so I'm trying to make, we're going through a period
cleansing.
Of yes, we're just getting the body recalibrating, as Alex says beautifully. Okay, so. We're not going to do a taco party.
No taco
despite
party.
Despite what Chris wants to do.
I want a taco party.
We are doing a simple poaching
yeah.
now. I think I poach too quickly.
Yep.
And so I get too many bubbles going.
Mm-hmm.
I love this instruction. I love the idea. I don't throw things in.
You should.
What I do, yep, I'm going to borrow right from that. And now what I do, though, is instead of water, I will either add water and chicken broth, low sodium, or just straight chicken broth, and I will poach in that because it feels like it gives it more flavor. Do you think it does?
It does. It'll give it a little bit. You have to watch it because those chicken broths can have a lot of salt.
Oh, but
see, the thing is, this
low
is the
sodium.
This is the funny thing. Broth is basically meat cooked in water.
You're making your
own
little
stock. When you cook the chicken broth in the water, poach it, that stuff is now chicken broth. Juices and all that stuff come out of the chicken.
So I want to say that
and
again?
That liquid is really yummy. It can be used in soups. It can be used in sauces.
Oh, freeze it, huh?
Freeze it, whatever.
Or
make a little, you can take that if you want to keep going cleanse. You can take a little bit of that, thicken it with cornstarch, and you have a little sauce.
So I think, Chris, that you're saying, this is from a previous show, that even low sodium has sodium. So what you want to do is add water to the pan plus some chicken broth. And you only want it to cover the meat you have in the pan.
Just covering it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I cook it too fast and then the water all boils away.
Yeah.
So if I slow it down, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
I really, really love this idea of doing some poaching.
Clean
Can we do the same thing with vegetables? Let's name
carrots
it with broccoli, carrots.
Yeah, broccoli, carrots,
cauliflower maybe.
Asparagus
sweet potatoes,
from somewhere in
Brussels
the world.
Sprouts.
Brussels sprouts. I love poaching my potatoes.
I've been
I
using
chop them up small.
Green beans that
green
I keep
beans,
in the freezer and then, you know, they you cut them in half and they add such a nice little flavor and texture.
Here's where we need help. You know, I mean, we're poaching in a soft way, but let's face it, we're softly boiling vegetables and meat. Mm-hmm. People are going to say, oh, my God,
Flavorless.
Do I have to eat that? Feels flavor. What? No. Now, here comes the trick. What can we use in terms of herbs and spices to jack up the flavor but not jack up the calories?
But you could also add just a touch of butter, though, just a tiny, tiny, I mean.
As a flavoring agent.
Right at the end.
So a shaving of butter.
Yeah.
And you just rub it on the top of your chicken breast or your whatever
drizzle
it is.
Of olive oil.
And think about other
little,
things.
A half a cap of olive oil on your vegetables.
And think about other things that bring up flavor. Lemon juice, lime juice, a little fresh orange.
Orange zest.
Yeah, a splash of cider vinegar.
Beautiful seasonings, mixtures that you have right now.
Curry
some
powder
of them are heavy salt.
No,
so
but
saffron thread would be fun for your
thread.
Chicken.
Sure.
Okay.
And again, don't throw that broth away, the poaching liquid away, because that
but
can
never,
be used.
I don't even know what you're doing.
Things.
I never have any left.
Hers goes
see, you're
away.
Poaching.
Mine
you're not poaching.
Away.
You're boiling.
Well, okay.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. You should. You shouldn't lose any because
I think
you've
evaporating.
Covered. Yeah. You shouldn't have any evaporation. It should be covered so that everything is trapped in there. And basically, when you're done, you have almost the same amount as you started with liquid-wise.
Okay. All right. So never mind the resistance. Just go with him.
Don't boil.
All right. Yeah, don't boil.
Light
don't
simmer.
Even try and explain that you don't boil. Just say yes,
if you,
sir.
Look, I just got a new stove, and my stove, and it's not a fancy stove. It's like a regular GE stove, and it had a little thing on it. I haven't tried it yet, but it says simmer. And I was like, you know what? I got to try that.
What do you think that means?
No, I mean, I've never had a stove that said simmer before. Now, really fancy ones have simmer settings. So you can, right, just click, then you're done.
Look what I do. I simmer too high.
Yeah.
What does simmer mean?
You need a simmer burner.
What does simmer mean to people? I mean,
couple bubbles.
We are just, blup, we have blup, been bombarded blup. Through the years with people saying, even on simmer, I can't get my stove to go low enough. And so they go out and they buy copper plates.
Yep.
They do every trick imaginable to see if they can tame.
Older stoves do have a hard time to go into simmer. But you don't have to go buy anything fancy. Just putting a, you know, a heavy metal disc. We use little sheet pans, whatever you have to just diffuse.
They're
called diffusing. They're called diffusers, but whatever, it helps.
We're being calorie friendly on this particular part of the show, and later on we've got an incredible beef with onions that is just fork tender, and the onions are just really, really good. So we're calorie friendly this time of year, trying to lead the way, trying to reset our palates too, because that's one of the benefits. So what else can we poach in besides my chicken broth?
One of my favorite things is milk.
Fat-free milk?
I don't do fat-free milk. I do a regular milk, but I don't see why you couldn't.
I would do fat-free milk.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I do.
Mine actually works better.
Same process.
Yeah, gentle.
Right? Gentle.
There's going to be a little more sugar in fat-free milk, but that's okay.
But again, it adds a little bit of flavor, right? And it's not a lot, and it's a natural sugar, so it's processed by the body a little
easier. What does that give you?
Gives you a little bit more flavor.
Richness, a tiny bit of richness.
Sure.
Hmm. I threw in some carrots in that.
I love at the end
Same
throwing
whole thing.
A hand,
peppercorns.
And at the end, throw in a handful of peas just at the end, right?
When are you putting peas in?
Right at the end, because I use frozen
only
peas.
Take a few
so
seconds,
heat them up. Yeah, right at the end, I'll throw peas in there, and then with a slotted spoon, dish them out and put that right on my chicken. Yeah.
Ah.
Or fish, right? Salmon, sure.
You would do salmon and milk?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm. And again, watch.
I do salmon in chicken broth.
You can.
And in water.
You put a little dill in for your seasoning.
Yeah.
You know, I don't season the water the way you two do, and I'm learning from you.
Yeah, that's going to be a big thing. Yep. Especially like you said, zest, lemon, lime, orange.
Yeah, that I do.
That adds intensity.
But you wouldn't put the zest in the milk, would you?
Sure.
You would?
Yeah, orange? Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking if we can do this full flavor cooking with minimal fats, minimal sugar, for a while we can reset our palates so that when we taste our food, it's going to just be blockbuster. And you have the added benefit of it being calorie friendly. You might feel better in some profound way and say, wow, I think I'm going to eat this way a little bit longer. It's up to you, whatever you want to do.
I like serving this kind of stuff, too, on raw vegetables. So I have my nice warm poached, let's just say salmon or chicken. If you take fresh carrots, some radishes, and just chop them up fine and throw that in a bowl and just hit it with a little bit of vinegar, teeniest little pinch of salt, and toss it and then serve whatever you're poaching on that. That gives you fresh vegetables in that warm protein. It's a great meal and fresh and healthy.
We haven't mentioned vegetable broths for people who are, lots and lots of people are much more vegetarian now and vegan. So if you're into the whole vegetable broth thing, does anybody have a favorite vegetable broth? I don't know enough about them.
We do the old clean out the refrigerator again, and then you use mushrooms and that stuff.
You make your own?
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, I'm a tomato guy. I have trouble with a lot of vegetable broths, but the one I seem to like the best is I take just a regular tomato juice, and that's what I start
like
my...
Like a can of
tomato whatever.
Juice or something?
Yeah, Sacramento. Again, it has a little bit of sodium, but you know.
Whoa. I just recently was thinking, why am I having so much salt? So I went through the supermarket
cabinet.
And started looking at the salt content in everything, and I was floored. Yeah. Honestly, this is a dangerous...
When you see thousands of milligrams.
They'll say 1,000 milligrams, and it's one serving, and there are three servings. And I'm thinking, are you kidding? In this can, there are 3,000?
That's what makes it taste palatable, though, right? Without
salt
the salt.
Is a flavor enhancer. Yeah.
So how do we... Here's
make it
the
yourself.
Thing. If I can make my own red sauce for pasta without thousands of sodium grams, doing what, say, Lydia Bastianich or some of the other Italian chefs do, or grandmothers, all I have to do is put in some onions and garlic and carrots and celery and maybe a whisper of salt, you know, whatever it
is. Olive oil.
Real canned tomatoes or fresh tomatoes. and I'm good to go. Yeah. And it's really
delicious.
But you
have delicious. To watch your canned tomatoes, too,
fresh
right?
Fresh basil.
Yeah.
Some of them have a lot.
And they'll say no salt added.
Yeah, you have. That's what I'm saying. You have to watch the ones that have no salt. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just did this last night, weirdly enough. Even in the health food aisle, if it's a quote-unquote soup, it's loaded with sodium.
I have a friend who, same problem, went to the doctor, had, why are you getting some? I don't need any salt. I don't need any salt. I don't put salt in anything. And you know where he found it? Bottled water.
Really?
Bottled sparkling water. And the brand he was drinking has a lot of
sparkling water.
And he's like, no, I just drink water. I don't put salt on anything. Yeah. I don't put salt in anything. And he was drinking three big bottles of sparkling water a day.
I'm really speechless.
Right? And who would think that it would be in water?
It's hidden.
Hidden. You have to check your bottled sparkling water for sodium level.
So sodium also, if we're being calorie friendly right now, not only does it dull your taste buds, but it does activate in the body in a way that stores fat instead of burning fat.
Agreed.
So this is another reason besides health that we don't want to load everything with sodium, right, people?
But it's
so
not
watch
easy.
Watch out for it.
Because you need the flavor, so you have to be very smart in your food by using citrus, by using vinegars, by using
herbs and spices.
Yeah.
There are a million out there, your peppercorns, your all the things you were talking about.
I learned this working with the U.S. Navy. I did a program years ago called Adopt-A-Ship, where they took us chefs and put us on these big carriers. And
oh, that's very cool.
These recipes they use are very specific. They can't be changed. The only thing you can do differently is spices. Zero impact on the caloric value of the food. So we couldn't mess with salt. We couldn't mess with fat. So we were brought in to redesign the food.
Because
they're on a 30-day meal program. After 2-3 months, you're eating the same thing. Oh, it's this day again. Yeah. So how do you change the food? So we changed their entire menus by just changing spices because that doesn't impact. So that's where you get your high impact. Go to your spice. And I tell people when I teach, too, you buy this little thing and it costs you $7 of, I don't know, curry powder, and you only used it once. No, experiment. Put it in things that you don't necessarily think curry would go with and try it.
And can I encourage you to look at the label? Because there are companies that are loading spices with sodium.
Wow.
It's not necessary.
So spices?
Well, seasoning mixes, will have a lot of salt in them.
Seasoning
curry
mixes
powders
do.
And stuff like that could have salt
but,
in them.
And you know something? Honestly, you don't need these things if you flavor well.
You know, it's funny. In Spain, we'll take like a piece of toast and then, you know, like in Tuscany, they don't add even salt to their bread, to the dough when they make it. But then if you like add a little drizzle of olive oil and then just some big flaky salt on top, you get the sensation of salt, right? But you're only getting a minuscule amount.
This is just like what we were saying with a little tiny drop of olive oil or a teeny thin piece of shaving of butter. It's a flavoring agent.
Not a main
you're agent. Saying the same thing with salt.
You don't
salt.
Have a craving for it. You feel like you satiated your
like
desire for salt.
25 grains will do the trick.
Yep.
Your palate will
without
say.
Without hiding 1,000 milligrams in a jar of something.
Exactly. So I'm excited about this for our palates and everything else. All right. We've got lots more to do. Later on in the show, if we got a beef and onions for you, more mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. And we're online now at foodschmooze.org. And we'll be right back.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton, and I wanted to tell you that you can sign up for our podcast. All you do is go once to foodschmooze.org, and you'll see podcast sign up. And then our show comes to you so you can listen on your time. This is how more and more people listen. So I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Brusberry, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province, and we are going low-calorie for the first part of the show. Later on, we're going to tell you how to make a beef with smothered onions, and there's not a lot of fat in that, and there's not a lot of salt. Because of the elements, it's really delicious. So we're going to do that, and let's do a wine. We found this great Italian wine, and it's called Invetro. I-N-V-E-T-R-O, Invetro. And it's made by the Ranieri Vineyard in Italy. It's available in our broadcast area. This is on our website, foodschmooze.org. Picture of the label, what to say at your wine store when you call ahead, because they can't stock everything. We don't want you to make a wasted trip or to find out that it's wildly overpriced somewhere and you don't want to pay that. Tell us about this wine, Alex. It's from the Tuscan region of Italy.
Yeah, Tuscany is so pretty. It's one of my favorite areas. You love it there, too. It's like rolling hillsides. The main grape that they grow there is Sangiovese. You know, that's where Chianti comes from, Chianti Classico and Chianti Reservas. And unlike Chianti, this is a blend. So they're taking Sangiovese, the normal grape that's all over Tuscany, and they're blending it with a little bit of Merlot, 25%. And 25% Cabernet Sauvignon.
So those are the three grapes.
That's the three grapes. So it's hardier than a typical Chianti. So it has, you know, more of that structure we've talked about in the past, like that sort of dry sensation from the Cabernet. You always have a good description of tannin structure, but
you're doing a good job.
This would be a fun wine with beef.
Oh, it's good with the beef and onions.
Can I ask this?
Pizza.
I would have this with any chicken with a hearty sauce on it. Pasta puttanesca.
You know in Florence when they take that huge piece of beef? What is it? Florentine beef?
Florentine beef, yeah.
This would be fun with that.
It would. So yeah,
big chunk of meat.
A big chunk of meat.
So Alex is right. There's a tannin in the wine, and that means that there's this kind of slightly drying on your teeth or on the sides of your tongue, as if you'd had a tea bag touch the sides of your tongue. You think, why do I want that in my wine? Well, every note of a song contributes something to the overall feeling of the song, you know? So that's what wine is. It's a song. It's a composition. And so you've got the winemaker doing stuff, mixing different things, and then you've got the soil and the climate and the rain and the stones in the earth, and everything is going into this thing you're drinking. And I adore that this magic happens and gets put in a bottle and is fabulous with food.
It's a rule breaker. These are people that didn't want to be told what grapes they could grow and what kind of barrels they could use. So they sort of veered off their own course, and they called it Super Tuscans. So typically, Super Tuscan
what does
is,
that mean?
Well, it's a made-up word. You know, it's made-up name for wine that doesn't follow the convention of, like, the appellation. So
it wasn't a marketing term, or it became one, maybe. They meant what?
Italians felt like they couldn't use the smaller barrels that they were using in France. You know, the barriques, the typical barrel that you see in all the posters in wine shops.
Why not?
Well, the appellation wouldn't let them use them. And they couldn't grow Cabernet Sauvignon. And so people like Antonori said, we want to plant these other grapes. Cabernet comes from France. It doesn't come from Italy. So it makes sense. There's 2,000 or 3,000 varietals in Italy alone. Grapes you probably haven't heard of. But Cabernet, for example, is a French grape. And they wanted to grow Cabernet. And they also wanted to grow Merlot, another French grape. And then they started barrel aging
it. Because they thought it would do well there, right?
Well, it's sort of the dilemma when you've done something for so long and you follow the rules for so long, stuff gets stale, I guess. And people thought they wanted to try something different. So
they were being modernists.
Yeah. They coined it Super Tuscans. And they said, you know, you can keep your appellation. We'll just sell it as a, you know, this name, Super Tuscan. Typically, they're really expensive. This wine, for $18, gives you that experience of a really fancy Super Tuscan.
Yeah.
But an opportunity for anyone to try.
I really like it.
I like them because they don't have sugar, so Italian wines are much drier. They're food friendly. Even on a Wednesday night, we always joke and have like spaghetti Wednesday. Like this would be fun. Invite some friends over, make a big bowl of pasta, you know, a couple bottles.
What was that commercial? Anthony! Out the window. Yeah. Okay.
I like that it has a little bit of a rebellious spirit then. I think that a wine that has personality like that and it doesn't follow the rules. Yeah. If you're the kind of person who has a little bit of a rebellious spirit and you don't follow the rules, this wine's for you.
This is the resistance right here, baby. Okay, so In Vetro is its name, and it's made by the Ranieri Vineyard. This is a family that's been around for a long time. This wine was made in 2013 and then sat around in these barrels. They fought, just like sometimes the grapevines fight through the soil. These vineyards around this region fought to do what they wanted to do. And they ended
cool
up
story.
With a brilliant marketing thing, Super Tuscan. So when you've gone around in the world, probably in the last 10 years, you've seen, and I think it's more men than women. I don't usually talk like this, but they will say big reds. I like big reds.
Oh, this is a big red.
This is a big red.
Oh, this is a big red.
So the reason that, you know where that comes from? I think that there's a theory in science that women have a slightly more refined taste buds, so they could be kept in nature from poisons that would harm them during pregnancy. Whereas men, except for the group that self-selects out and goes to cooking school in the men group, their taste buds are not quite as sharp. So when they have this, I don't criticize them for saying, I love big reds, because they need them.
Interesting.
They need...
In a big cigar.
They need them.
Kills your palate as well.
Don't make me laugh. They
That's
need,
an interesting theory.
They need the big flavor. This is true for people who are old.
Yeah.
Their taste buds are starting to wane a bit.
Sense
and
of
so
smell
they
goes.
Probably tend to like a more powerful wine. Yeah.
The other thing, look at if you flip the bottle over, it tells you the alcohol content, and that's 14%.
They're higher, right?
So it has more alcohol than a typical European wine might have 12.5%.
Alex, can you explain to us why that is part of a recipe?
Typically, they try to keep alcohol levels down around 12.5% because, like you were saying, it's a recipe. Too much alcohol, it becomes volatile.
Yeah.
You get the sensation of ethanol. And
out of balance,
yeah,
right?
And if you have a delicate wine that nature kind of prevents you from having too much alcohol just by the sugar content of the grape, but if you have a really hot region that produces a lot of sugar, those yeast that make the alcohol can go up to almost 15%. But those kind of wines are just, they'll knock
bigger,
you out.
Bigger, bolder.
Yeah, bigger, bolder. And the only way they
work,
the only way they work is if they have a ton of flavor to balance out the alcohol. So you need to have that ripe fruit, and then you can have the alcohol to support it.
I have a friend who loves big wines, and that's the first thing he looks on. If it's got 12%, and he goes, not big enough for me. And I'm like, how can you tell by the alcohol? But that's how, right?
Yeah.
Because
it's what higher likes, right?
But higher alcohol is usually means a bigger, bolder wine.
So we thought this was good with all red sauces, charred lamb chops, maybe
a
charred roast.
Now, pot roast would be fun too.
Ooh, yeah.
So can you help me on this? If you poured this for me sitting around by the fire, most people would say, that's not a wine to sit and sip by the fire. You want something softer, you want blah, blah, blah. I don't care if it does that tannin thing. Mm. There's a beauty to this wine. I just find it really, really wonderful for the price point.
It's a nice balance, right? A big cab needs protein. That tannin tastes really good with like a cab and a slab, they say. So the protein in the meat sort of has an affinity towards the tannins. And then you get this elegance. Mm-hmm. But alone, it can be like a little too astringent, a little too like tannic, too much structure.
Too much too baggy stuff.
But the Sangiovese in this mellows it out. So then it's like a perfect compromise.
And the Merlot.
And the Merlot
the
as well.
The touch of Merlot, which is
juicy
a softening
and ripe
agent.
And
you know, I agree. It's probably best with food, but I like it.
I like wines that happen to be between, like, say, $15 and $20. And this is $18. So it's right in that slot. Yeah. But, you know, these are, for me, you know, if you figure a couple people, there's four or five glasses of wine, depending upon how big your wine glass is. if you go out, it's a $4 or $5 glass of wine, which is okay.
You know, we've got food and recipes coming up, but if you're a wine drinker, if you're not a wine drinker, or if you don't drink alcohol at all, I'm so sorry. This is, just bear with us, because we're going to get to vegetables and stuff. But here's the thing. What is the best way? If you bought this for around $18 a bottle, and we've seen now for five glasses, it's really so affordable. How are you saving your wine in the bottle? I know what I do at home, but what are you folks doing?
The cheap and easy is that they have the vacuum. I think you get them anywhere now. It's a little rubber thing, and it has a little pump, and you just pump out the air.
I use it.
If you cork it, if you don't have that, put it in the refrigerator, and the cooler temperature helps, you know, preserve it.
Okay. But with a wine this big, after the second day, it's
like
still,
we talked about before.
Yeah, it's so big. Like on a wine like this,
it'll be great tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be great tomorrow because it's such a big wine. It'll actually be almost a little better tomorrow. It'll be a little softer tomorrow.
Yeah,
if that's.
But by the third day.
Yeah, by the third day,
you're starting
losing
to watch it. Some people just want to have a glass with dinner.
Yeah.
And so they need this to last 5 days. And I say to you, get this vacuum, little
it's
vacuum
a little pump.
What are they, like $10?
They're nothing now.
And they have these little things you put in. I use them every single day.
I have one. I have actually four different toppers, so you can have four different bottles. It came in the kit, so you can suck the air out of four different bottles.
You know,
it's a little plastic cork that
most wine shops are also sell the inert gas that you just spray. But, you know.
I don't like that. It just... I don't know. You know what it is? I can't see it, and I know I can see this hand pumping thing that I can. You know,
that,
you know, you
I always
do
like to see how many
just,
pumps.
Yeah, you just sort of the spray you just put in there, and you can't really. You look at it, you're like, is it in there?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in there. Should I put more in there?
It's true. You have a signal psychologically.
Yeah,
when
like
you're,
oh, it's
when
full.
You're
yeah, you're like
air
it gets
out.
Right. Mm-hmm. It gets harder each pull, and then you're like, oh, that's
there's
it.
There's one more pump.
Yeah, and then it snaps it back.
I love that though, Faith. That people that you would have a bottle of wine for. All week. I mean, that's so neat.
Alex.
It's so rare.
A few hours.
Well, no.
You're being generous.
Okay. I mean, it would be interesting someday to see Europeans or really people from any other country who drink wine. How much wine do they have with dinner on a weeknight? Is it one glass? Is it two glasses? What's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, how does this go?
My mom always tells stories that my grandpa would, you know, in Spain and in the south and Andalusia would go every day to the bodega after
and
work.
Fill up the jug,
and
right?
they'd fill up and they'd use liter bottles.
Yeah.
So it's still a bottle of wine. It was a liter. These are 750, so three quarters.
What's the difference?
Three
quarters of a bottle.
Yeah.
You mean his bottle was way bigger. He brought home much more wine.
Yeah, 25%. Okay. My mom said he'd wrap it with like a wet cloth or a newspaper, and they put it in the window, and then the air would actually cool the bottle, like through evaporative. The wind would blow and evaporate the water, and then it would drop the temperature of the wine just to make how we like wine. Cooler?
Chiller. Yeah,
Was the chiller in the house, the natural chiller.
Way.
Newspaper water.
Wow.
In the window with
water
a wet cloth.
Wet
newspaper.
Yeah. That's a fascinating
very old
story.
World.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I'm going to try that this summer.
Wow. All right. So we're doing kind of low calorie except for this jaunt toward the wine. But if you want to have just one glass, we're telling you how to do that, to use this vacuum system you can get in almost
anywhere.
Any liquor store now. And coming up, we have vegetables and this meat dish that we made with stewed onions and beef that is fork tender. And there's very little salt and fat in this dish. It was delicious. And I think... You know, every once in a while, if you're going to have beef, this is the thing to have, especially during our calorie-friendly season. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Recipes and our wine recommendations at foodschmooze.org. And you know we're coming back. is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life, and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the east end of Long Island, that means the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken, and to hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9, and Saturdays at noon. Of course, our curated recommendations are at foodschmooze.org. You know our song, Beans and Cornbread. You know we do that. So Alex was singing during the break.
Oh, jeez.
Go ahead, Alex. Give us a bar.
No, it was...
yeah, right.
Beef and onions had a fight.
Yeah.
because that is and a recipe for
I think I broke the microphone.
No, it was adorable. So... beef and onions, it's our featured recipe in this segment. We found this recipe in a cookbook called Six Seasons. It's Joshua McFadden. Mm-hmm. We have this recipe on our website, and we wanted to tell you about it because we had it just before the show. Chris made it for us, mm-hmm. and it was absolutely delicious. You put your fork into the beef, and it's one of these shreddy fork tender things. There's so many onions that are kind of slightly brown and
soft,
mm-hmm. and with every bite you get, I loved it. And I look at it, and it's only, because we're doing calorie-friendly on this show, only a couple tablespoons of butter, but serves four people. So think about that divided by four. And the salt is just to taste, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, and that's it in terms of fat and sodium. There are your suspects, and that's pretty darn good, and it is delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know how you do it, because beef... chuck roast, salt and pepper, olive oil, butter, onions, garlic, handful of thyme, cup of white wine. That's it. That's the recipe.
Simple.
And I was like, all right, I'll put it all together, and I'm cutting it all up. And even when I had all the ingredients laid out, I kept looking at it going, could use some broth or something or some stock. Or and I'm thinking, white wine, well, white wine. This needs like a big red wine. And I keep looking at it.
Tell me what happened in the cooking, where first you said, this needs stock.
And it's so good.
Yeah. What happened during this recipe that turned this into this delicious thing?
Yeah, it's the onions.
Yep.
So, and I didn't, again, you have this ability to see through recipes. I didn't see that, oh, wow, it's a lot of onions. It's like almost the same amount of onions as it is beef. Pretty close.
You know, we've had brisket with onions.
Yeah.
I've never had... something that was almost one-to-one.
Yeah, and this is pretty close.
As many onions as there is beef.
Yeah.
And you think, is that good?
That's what I said.
And it is good.
It's what the hobbits eat.
It's what they
eat.
That's what you, yeah, it's like, hey, I know that recipe. But again, I don't remember that scene in The Hobbits. And I kept looking at it, but what happens? So you brown the beef. You take the beef out, and then you add all these onions. And it's a lot of onions. And you cook these onions a little bit to get them going. And then you throw in your garlic, your thyme, and your white wine. You put your beef back on top of it.
Sitting on top of it.
Yeah, on top of it. And then you braise it in an oven, 300 degrees for 1.5 to 3 hours.
Let me say something.
I went to the three-hour line on it.
When you say to people braise, some people's eyes start going, what? So it means you just slow cook it.
Slow cook, 300-degree oven, covered for, like I said, the recipe said 1.5 to 3. I went for the full three.
And that makes the meat tender.
I don't know who came up with the idea, I mean the word braise, but I think that's intimidating people.
Yeah. Well, it's a classic
just cook something in the oven. Yeah.
You have a braise button on your
in
oven?
A pot
I should. I do not have a braise button.
Somebody should do that.
You have the simmer button.
No,
it's
but
a
you're right.
To our fortune.
It doesn't need to be anything more than throw it in a slow oven, let it cook for a long time, and let me tell
and
you,
then what happened?
What happened is all the juice and flavor came out of those onions, and like. Almost like enveloped the beef and like sucked it in. And the meat settled and the onion sort of skirted up over the top of it. And the longer it cooked, juice just kept coming out of, and in the end, the smells that were coming out of the oven, considering it was just onions, garlic, and a little bit of thyme, it was wonderful.
It's that simple.
And then when I pulled it out and I just tasted the onions, it was this like cross of stew, French onion soup, right? All these things.
All that umami flavor.
Oh, it was so amazing. And then you take the meat out and you just spoon the onions and a little bit of that juice over the top of it. And do you need anything else?
Sourdough toast.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I just
we're locale. Sorry.
Calorie friendly. Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
So, okay.
A piece of sourdough
toast.
Yeah, a little micro.
And again, the butter being 2 tablespoons, we didn't even eat all the onions and juice that were in there, so we didn't even get 4, and then all those extra onions. I still have like 2 or 3 cups of those onions. I'm going to take those home.
Really?
I'm going to stir them in like a pasta.
So you need all the onions to get the flavor, but you don't serve all the onions?
Well, it was a lot of onions.
He had a lot left. So this is on our website. foodschmooze.org. It's
keeper.
On there right now. It is a keeper. We
Delicious.
Like this recipe. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. We're doing kind of healthy and calorie friendly and eating clean at this time of year. And I'm someone who, after reading a million of these books recommending a million different approaches, the one thing that I think is true is that clean eating means everything. In other words, stuff with not a lot of junk in it. Mm-hmm. So here you are having beef. If people have heart issues, and really everybody, who doesn't? So if you've got a heart issue or you want to be careful about your beef intake, what kind of beef are you using? That is the key. So here's what I've read through the years that convinces me. Mm-hmm. Please don't pay attention to what I'm about to say. Because somebody else will have another theory. But I believe that what they feed the beef is what makes us sick. So if they feed the beef well, not with crap corn, not with chemical stuff, blah, blah, blah. If the beef are fed well, then that beef is not going to make us as sick, cause as much heart disease. So think about this when you're buying beef. If you're trying to eat clean right now at this part of the year, think about where you're getting your beef. Maybe this is, if you're going to have this on a rare occasion, maybe this is not the time to not know the source of your beef. Maybe somebody is raising beef locally in a healthful way. Chris.
Go to Thorncrest Farm in Goshen, and while you're there, you can get chocolate. So he raises Texas Longhorns. And the beef
whatever he raises, I don't care about the breed as much as I care.
Oh, watch what he does. They're all pasture fed.
What is he feeding?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, all natural.
You know who else is?
There's a lot of good farms around here.
Danny Miser at Grass and Bone in Mystic has his farm in Stonington, and I think he has a butcher shop and is really conscientious.
And does he?
He is really conscientious.
Right. Yeah. And James.
So I think that's the thing. You just look around. You don't have to go far. If you're around here, you don't have to go to Mystic. Yeah. And if you're in Mystic, you don't have to go all the way to Goshen.
Or if you're driving by a town, like our listener, you were saying, you stop by. Yeah. You happen to be in the neighborhood.
But you know what? Listen to us. How much work do you have to, how far do you have to drive to get beef that is more healthful and has been raised the natural way? That really is kind of crazy the way we've got the world set up. That's number one. And the other thing is, let's say we have beef less often.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is, I want to feed hungry people. That's my number one concern. So this is like counting angels on the head of a pin. If somebody's starving, what can I give them to keep them in this life? And so maybe it's not the most exquisite beef. Maybe it's not, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just like, go if you can, go for a healthful beef.
So I'm wondering, do you think you could substitute like big earthy mushrooms for the beef?
You absolutely could.
Get, wouldn't necessarily cook as long, but you could get that same sort of.
What a great idea, Alex. I love that idea. Big portobellos, right? Steaks, mushroom steaks. And there are a few other ones that are that big. So that's fantastic as an idea. Yeah. You also could do a firm tofu.
Oh, sure.
you know, and just do this whole recipe that way. Mm-hmm. You probably could do a cauliflower steak.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Or I've had big slabs of butternut squash, too. Take the top part, you know, the really solid part, and instead of chopping it up, cut it into big slabs lengthwise. And, you know, you could do like an inch thick, and you can get these big butternut squash steaks, and then do the same thing. Salted pepper, sear it, cook it in the onions, and then you have these like...
Could you do a little Worcestershire sauce?
You could. Delicata
squash, too, sure. Any kind of hearty squash is a great substitute for beef.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the meat doesn't play the star role in this. The star really is the 2 pounds of onions.
Fabulous. Okay, here's a quick thing. You might have heard me recently talking about this on the air at different hours throughout the day for our 60-second food schmooze, but I wanted to bring it to the main show because I know all of you on the show, Robin and Alex and Chris, that you're all French toast lovers. You love mouth texture. And so this is a thing that we do in our family, which is to make a crispy French toast.
Oh. Crispy French toast?
Yeah. So,
good to me.
Everybody makes...
I'll take soggy kind too.
I'm wondering how.
There is something that happens to us when you have that, crunchies. You know, like little crispy...
Crunchy.
So French toast is beautiful. I adore it. What if we even jacked it up to a new level? So you're making French toast, so you dip it in milk and eggs. Some people add vanilla. So
any fancy bread
all
or anything?
All this stuff. It doesn't even matter.
Leftover bread?
No.
Yeah.
So you dip it in all that.
Yeah.
And then here comes the fun part.
I was going to say, this regular French toast.
You dip it in something that creates a crispy texture on the outside. And then in every bite, you're going...
What is that?
Like cornflakes or something like
you,
that? Or?
Yes. This is a smart thing from you. So you could dip it in cornflakes on the outside that you kind of crush up a little bit. You could do panko breadcrumbs.
So it's like breaded. Yeah.
You crush nuts.
Cookies. Crushed cookies.
Or you could do my favorite granola, anybody's granola, and just
That's good.
And then into the either the baking dish in the oven, you know, if you were being calorie friendly, or some people will pan fry it a little butter or whatever.
Wow,
and then, oh my God, it is so fantastic.
Breaded
when
French
you cut
toast.
And you're just doing that. I mean, why does anybody like cereal or granola? Because
it's crunchy.
This is it.
I would take chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, my gosh.
They're the like crispy kind.
Round
why
up
not?
Chocolate
yeah.
chip cookies.
Or potato chip.
Wow.
Drop it on the
or
floor.
Or, you know, I like actually, you could do crumbled bacon. I just want to say that. You really could.
Crumbled bacon and panko and mix them together.
Savory, sweet.
Yeah, like a mix of panko and breadcrumbs and do that. And then you'd get the crispy, crunchy bits from the,
maple syrup?
And the fat from the bacon would melt into
what
the
if you
panko.
Did nuts and coconut?
That's another good one.
That could be one.
That's like an
almond joy.
French toast.
Oh, with little slivers of almonds too.
So we were healthy for about 5 years.
Yeah, where'd that go? See, you've got to say, this is how we end, right? We've been healthy for 45 minutes. Time us, and now it's over.
That lasted.
Where's the French toast? Okay, since we're having French toast and bacon, I want maple syrup, and
you need some butter.
And I'd like to put some ice cream and whipped cream on top.
But wait, we also say that we don't want to deprive ourselves.
No.
I kept myself together.
Wow, you fell off that wagon quick.
I kept myself together for as long as I could.
And that's it. I'm done.
No, but it's clean.
It's
the
clean
French toast
French
is
toast.
Incredibly clean.
I love it. We did our best today.
We covered a chocolate chip cookie.
Whipped cream and ice cream on the side, please.
Even this French toast I could do in a healthful way. I don't exactly know.
Grass-fed butter.
Egg whites instead of whole eggs.
Seriously, that's
Greek
a good
yogurt.
Idea, Chris.
Yeah.
The nuts, you know, I believe
we're
those are healthy.
We're not excited anymore. Like
those
we
are healthy nuts.
Ago. Yeah,
no,
but notice we're not as excited.
Yeah, no. I like it. I love this show. I loved all your comments on the show. Alex, Robin, and Chris. Really fantastic. And thank you so much for pulling up a chair at our table. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes and never eat more than you can lift. That's what this show was about. In New Haven, well, mostly. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.